all those things combined, along with the rest of the team that they had built out. And I think this is really key for newer investors or anybody looking to scale up. When you don't have that experience yourself, it's really important to have other people on that team who do have that experience.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Naked Truth about Real Estate Investing. And today we have John Kosman, and he is in Cincinnati. And we're going to talk about, he's from Cleveland, and we're going to talk about who he roots for, the Bengals or the Browns. That's all we're going to talk about. No, not really. We're going to talk about how he went through bankruptcy with GM. He was an employee there. And then a couple of times with a couple other companies, how his, he went from buying single family to multifamily, you know, how he's help people go, investors invest in over $100 million worth of apartments. I love his story. Very genuine. You're going to get some good insight. He's a marketing guy in his previous W-2. Got two kids at home, so hopefully we can hear him in the background as we do this interview. That'd be a bonus. But John, why don't you go ahead and introduction?
I see we have very different expectations for this show, right? You want to hear my kids. I don't want to hear my kids, but we'll see how it goes. But yeah, man, you mentioned where I'm at here in Cincinnati. Well, I don't know if you heard my son. There he is yelling now.
There he goes. Right on cue.
Well, yeah, right on cue, right? But living, you know, Cincinnati, born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, kind of bounced around the Midwest. And you're right. We've helped investors get into over $100 million worth of apartments. And for me, really, it started with my professional background. I spent 15 years in advertising and marketing, working with big brands like Coors Light, Nike, Mountain Dew. I worked at General Motors, and really understanding how to convey some of the best benefits of these products and services. But also, while I was at that, you know, at some of these companies, I was at GM, went through bankruptcy. That was a crazy time and a lot of anxiety, not just for me, but all of my peers, my colleagues. It also made me realize that none of this is guaranteed. At any moment, it doesn't matter how great of an employee you are. It doesn't matter how brilliant of a marketer you are. It can be wiped away. You can be let go and you can be phased out. You could be, you know, whatever. So I wanted to find a way where I could insulate myself from that uncertainty. And real estate was really the vehicle to help me do that. So I sought out to build my own personal portfolio with my wife. We started building up that portfolio, starting with the 2-unit, then the 3-unit, then an 8-unit. And the one challenge we kept running into is we kept running out of our own money. So at that moment, we started warming up to this idea of partnering with other people, particularly because we had friends and family who were interested in real estate, but they weren't looking to invest the same amount of time and energy and resources that we had already invested up to this point. So that kind of led us down the path of syndication, which is just a fancy way of saying group investing. Instead of one person going out there and buying a property by themselves, we pool resources together. And with that money, we'll go out and buy a larger property where we can put property management in place and manage it more professionally. So that's what we do. And like I said, we've helped investors get over $100 million worth of apartments, and we continue to grow from that perspective.
Perfect. So I'm gonna go back a little bit, and I want to talk about your time in corporate America. I've never been laid off, and you know, I've never gone through a company that, you know, that I worked for, you know, and they were filing for bankruptcy. So what, I remember that, but what year was that?
That was 2008. So, and for us, I think the trouble, the signs of trouble really began in late April or, you know, early May, 2008.
Okay. So going through that process, what got you involved like in real estate? Were you already doing real estate at that time, or did that kind of push you? What kind of opened your eyes to real estate? Even if, you know, you started with a duplex, triplex, yeah, like that, but what pushed you that way?
I was always interested in real estate, but I had no idea how to get started. I remember being in college, I would grab the newspaper. There's a weekly paper called the Sun Press, and I would grab this paper and I would just look at real estate for stuff to buy, but I had no idea how to do it. I didn't know what to do. I just knew you could call the number. I didn't know how to analyze a deal. I didn't know how to run numbers. I knew nothing. So obviously I didn't get very far from that standpoint. And I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad around that time. So I knew real estate was a great way to build wealth. I knew that most of the, you know, the wealthy people in this country hold at least a portion of their portfolio in real estate. So I knew I wanted to be in real estate. I just had no idea how. So fast forward to this time frame where I'm watching my peers both go through layoffs, but also just the anxiety of not knowing what was going to happen with the company. And it was a daily thing. I mean, most companies go through bankruptcy like fairly quickly, where, hey, this things are bad. We're going to have to let a lot of people go. And it's maybe a month, 2 months, whatever it is. I mentioned from April to May is when it started. And if you recall, well, by the time we got to election season, this was another big thing. Was there going to be a bailout? Was there not going to be a bailout? So we had to wait for the new president to come in, President Obama at that time. You know, he finally, you know, had the bailout. There was a structured bankruptcy. All of that stuff took like almost a year. So this is a lot of time to sit there and think about what's going to happen with your future. You know, people updating their resume, applying to different jobs. But again, the economy was completely, you know, distraught. So no one's really hiring at that moment. So I think for me, it just recognized that, you know what, we really need to go from thinking about getting into real estate to prioritizing this. And part of what that meant for me was moving out of Detroit to Chicago, a market where I felt that real estate investing was a little better for what I was hoping to get accomplished.
All right. So now let's talk about you were buying your own properties with your own money. And tell me kind of what point you said, okay, great. Our money's there. We can pull some of it out. Maybe none of it, maybe all of it. We got to go get, you know, we got to get investors, right? We got to get into the syndication. How did you learn about syndication?
So I was very fortunate to kind of start building a network. I didn't know anybody who was investing in real estate, right? This is part of my challenge of getting started. I had this idea, read it in a book, right? But I didn't know anybody who was doing this. So even when I made that decision when I was in Detroit to say, okay, this is what I need to do, I still didn't really know how to do it. But I started reading more blog posts and all that kind of stuff. When I moved to Chicago, one of the things that we prioritized was networking. So attending meetups, attending any REIA events, so a real estate investor association events. And I started to meet other real people who were investing in real estate. And that became really important for us. So when I bought the first property, that was a 2-unit that we house hacked. We lived in one unit, rented out the others. And at that moment, now when we're going to these REIAs, we at least have this one property we could talk to people about. And the great thing about going to events is you're going to meet other people. And if you are consistent in going, you're going to meet the other regulars. And one person in particular, she hosted a meetup that was a little bit closer for us. So we met her, you know, pretty much every time I went out there. And after about 6 months, we became kind of friends. We went out and had, you know, coffee. And you fast forward a little bit, we bought a 3-unit building. This person grew their portfolio. And I recall that they went from having 9 units in their portfolio to 80 units in their portfolio. And I just remember that being astonishing. How does one person go from 9 to 80? So I said, hey, you got to tell me what you did. So I sat down and I bought her breakfast and I said, listen, what did you do? How did you go from 9 to 80? And I fully expected her to tell me that, you know, her great grandfather passed away and left her $10 million or something crazy like that, right? Which is something I'm like, oh, okay, great. You got lucky or whatever the case is, but not something that I can implement. And she said she had some investors from the West Coast reached out, wanted to partner with her. And they put up the capital and she bought it. And I was like, wow, I had no idea that you could do that. I mean, I obviously knew you could do that, but it just didn't seem like a reasonable thing that would happen.
Not until you meet somebody face to face has done it, right? It's something in our mind just goes, right?
It just seems like a dream. Even in the books you read, right? They tell you, oh, you know, your first deal can be, even in the Rich Dad book, right? There's like, your first deal doesn't have to be a 4-unit or 2-unit. Your first deal could be a 200 unit. It's like, man, get out of here, right? Okay. But it's true when you break it down to the next level, but it's hard for a newer person to understand that logic because it just doesn't make sense.
All right.
So in talking to her, it really, for the first time, made other people's money, OPM is what they call it, it made it make sense. And the reason that it was so timely is at that moment, we had just bought our first commercial property. We bought an 8-unit building, commercial, hiring a property management company that I'm going to oversee for the first time. And we also had just saved $130,000 cash to buy this property. So I was right back to zero in my savings account. So now I'm kind of equity rich and cash poor. And here's the kicker. I didn't know this was coming, by the way. But about a month later, two things happened. One, I met the person who became my mentor. Two, the company I was working for also went into bankruptcy. So all of this happened around the same time frame. And at that moment, it kind of just triggered together to say, this needs to go from an idea in a maybe one day to I got to make this happen right now.
To an actual reality. This is very interesting, right? This is one of the things that I talk about all the time is people ask me, how did you get started? What did you do? Like, and at the end of the day, it's really not that challenging, right? And you kind of talked about it. Number one, you already had in your mindset, I got to do real estate, right? So you already had it in your mind. Hey, I need to do real estate, right? And number two, you had a network. You had a network, connect with people. And then number three, you went out and you took action. There's a lot of steps in between, but if you really kind of break it down with our conversation, that was pretty much the three things that you did, especially that the second one, right? That networking, because you connect with people that you have coffee with, you know, or maybe you see at the meetups, and then they go from 9 units to 81 units. It's just like to actually sit there and have somebody tell you in front of your face and you know them. It's just a different feeling, right? Or then when you read it in the book or you hear it on a podcast, oh, somebody did this, did that. Okay, well, it's hard to relate because you don't really know that person. So very interesting. I love the story.
Yeah, if I can just clarify, because you bring up such a great point. I think sometimes people hear a word like networking and it feels like, oh man, I want to go out there and kind of pretend, or, you know, I got to shake all these people's hand and try to, you know, make all this small talk with people. I didn't really go at networking with that mindset, right? I kind of went because I genuinely wanted to be around other people in this space. I didn't know anybody. So for me, this was the only time I felt like I was sane. I had this conversation with family members or friends. They're looking at me like I'm crazy. It's so risky. You're going to lose, you know, your cousin tried to do something like that and he lost $20,000. You know, like you want to surround yourself with people who are like-minded because you really need that to stay rejuvenated and positive and focused. So that was really what I was getting out of the networking events. But because I was so consistent, it didn't feel like it was networking and I was building relationships. So by the time I had that conversation with that person and heard that she went from 9 to 80 units, it was a natural connection for me to say, I'd love to pick your brain and buy you breakfast, as opposed to this awkward interaction where I'm like, I want to hear what you did. Like, we had been talking for months up to that point, right? We had built a real genuine kind of friendship. So she was happy to share more information about her success. And I just think that aspect is really key. If you go into it with the right mindset of adding value where you can and building real relationships, you can get a lot of value out of it.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned as well is, yeah, you go networking, but after you network, you're going to find those few people that you can build a relationship with, right? Like you built a relationship with her and then you're able to take them out for a coffee, right? You meet somebody for the first time. Hey, can I take you out a coffee? You know, it's like, yeah, they might say yes. They might say no. You got to understand people who are doing this business and they're pretty involved. They're pretty busy people. I'm not saying they're going to say no, but you know, if you build that relationship, right, it's a little bit different. And then you have somebody to call, you know, somebody you need some help, but it starts with the networking. So that's great. You got to go with an open mind. I love that. Definitely love that. So another question for you. So once you decide, okay, great, I'm going to use other people's money, I'm going to do syndication, right? Talk to me about your first project.
So it took a while to find that first project, right? Because here's the thing that most people don't tell you. When you're going to give away the bulk of the profits and the equity to other investors, the deals have more meat on the bones, right? So the deals we were doing were good deals for us. But if I got to give 50 to 70% away to someone else, all right, well, now this deal doesn't look quite as appetizing. So to look at deals differently, to structure them a little bit differently, we looked at a lot of deals. And that was something that took some conditioning to get used to. So it took about a year before we actually found a deal to work. And this was actually a deal through another partner. Going back to networking, through that mentorship, we had built some relationships. We attended an event down in Denver, Colorado. And my wife actually made a connection, said, hey, met this guy, seemed like a really cool dude. We're going to grab dinner. And I'm like, wait a minute, who is this person? You committed to dinner with somebody I didn't even get to meet yet? So we go to dinner, have a great conversation, and end up getting to know each other pretty well. Well, fast forward about 6 or 7 months. And two things happened. One, I launched my podcast, had him on as an early guest. But two, he actually came across a larger deal and we talked about the potential of partnering on that deal. And we ended up moving forward with him on that. So that was our first deal as a general partner where we helped our investors come in and help them with some marketing aspects and things like that. It was 192 units in San Antonio, Texas. And the thing that I loved is one, he lived in Austin, so he was really close to the property. His partner was really familiar with the market as well, had a great background in construction. Two, San Antonio is one of the top, you know, one of the best growing markets in the country. It's really ideally located kind of, you know, around the Austin market. But, you know, for me, I live in Cincinnati now, so it's kind of like Dayton is to Cincinnati, but it's a strong little sub market, but still big enough where it can kind of stand on its own a little bit. And there's a lot of growth, a lot of diversification in the employment. It was more affordable than Austin, more affordable than some of the other larger cities in that area. We felt like there was a pretty good basis going in. And all that means is the price per door going in was a good lower number. So we felt there was pretty good upside for us to implement our business plan. And we liked the overall deal structure. And that deal was a 70-30 split, which means 70% of the profits went to our passive investors, 30% of the profits went to the general partners, and we had an 8% preferred return, which means that the first 8% of profits went to investors, and we only got our profits after we hit that 8% threshold. So it was really structured in a way where I think it favored our limited partners and gave them some comfort, knowing that our interests were aligned, that they were going to get paid first, and we kind of had a carrot dangling on our side to perform. But again, all those things combined, along with the rest of the team that they had built out, and I think this is really key for newer investors or anybody looking to scale up. When you don't have that experience yourself, it's really important to have other people on that team who do have that experience. So even though we were newer, and quite frankly, even a partner we were working with, they had more experience than us, but they had never done a 192 unit deal before.
Sure.
But they had, you know, property managers, and we had the same mentor, and we had other people that were in the corner and on the team that could help make sure things were going swimmingly.
Awesome. So talk to me, you mentioned your podcast. Give us the name of the podcast.
Yeah, the show is called Multifamily Insights, used to be called Target Market Insights. And the show is available anywhere you listen to podcasts. And we cover really the ins and outs to successfully invest in multifamily, whether you're looking to build a small personal portfolio or you want to syndicate large 100 plus unit apartment deals, whether it be on the active or the passive side. We get into all the nitty gritty, all the ins and outs, what you need to know about looking at deals, due diligence, standing out with brokers, attracting capital, structuring deals. We get into a lot of those different things. And one of the things that's really important that people don't really understand, if you are going to build this out as a business, the marketing, the branding, all that is key, because you are really running a business and you have to treat it as such. Every business has operations, sales and marketing, HR. You have to have some sort of product or product development, right? The service, the product you're putting out there in front of people. You have to have all these departments, and marketing and sales is no different. You have to understand, who are you serving? What are they looking for? How can you help them? And that's one of the things that I really specialize, given on my background in marketing and advertising for 15 years for those brands we mentioned earlier.
Perfect. Yeah. Because one of the biggest things that I get from newer investors, or who already, or maybe even seasoned investors that want to jump into bigger projects, is like, how do we get the projects right? And how do you get money? That's the biggest thing. Like, they feel like they need $5 million in the bank. And I keep telling them, no, you don't need $5 million in the bank, right? You can go find a project, right? You can help with, there's always ways to partner in a project, right? You can either find a project, help sign a loan. You can have the experience or the net worth. You can help out with the asset management, right? And all the GPs help with the capital raise. And you have to have some other role than besides just raising money, just to be, you know, make sure you're compliant. But there's always ways to get involved, right? Even if you come in and you get a really small part, you learn the process, right? Gets you your credibility. You kind of know, you're like, you know what? Then you find out what you really like to do. You're like, man, I really love finding deals. Great. Then you focus on that, right? And then you bring that to, you know, somebody you meet at a networking event, somebody you connected with, somebody you built a relationship with. Then you're able to start the process, until at some point, you know, you can do a lot on your own, or you kind of just stay in your lane, right? And you're able to buy a lot of properties.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the way I say it is, there are three C's to attracting capital. And I think the way you laid it out is brilliant, right? For me, when I think about those three C's, the first one is confidence. And confidence comes from preparation. And I think this is an area where a lot of people kind of really skip over this step. But that confidence, that preparation, that's putting in the work. That means understanding the terms, analyzing enough deals so you truly understand whether or not this is a good deal, looking at enough stuff, having enough conversations, and just putting in the work so you are extremely confident in what you've done. Whether you've actually done it before or not, putting in the work gets you prepared for that. So that confidence cannot be manufactured. It is not blind hubris. It's not faking it till you make it. That's putting in the work. That's going to the gym. That's underwriting deals. That's talking to enough brokers. That's talking to enough investors. That's underwriting enough deals. That is the confidence that only comes from putting in the work. So the first C is confidence. Yep. Second C, you tapped onto it, right? Credibility. Credibility is not necessarily just from what you have, but also the team you've built. So my credibility at that time on that first deal was my experience professionally. While I had never done a 192 unit deal myself, I had been recognized as one of the top marketing and advertising professionals in the country. I had overseen $100 million advertising campaigns for large brands. I have overseen 7 agency partners and led them to successful integration of different campaigns. So I had that experience that, you know, provided me a lot of credibility. On top of that, I partnered with people. I had a mentor who had a lot of experience. My partners had a lot of experience. The property manager that we brought onto the team had a lot of experience. So we built a very credible team that was well positioned to execute what we were looking to do. And then that third C is your connections. And it kind of taps into what we talked about on credibility. But when we talk about connections and raising capital or attracting capital, as I like to say, well, those connections are going to be your first tier, you know, your friends and family, people in your network, but also who goes outside of that? You know, who are the people from meetup events that you go to, podcasts, other things like that, where you can connect with other people and expand your network. You have to continually be expanding your network if you want to consistently attract capital for your deals. So those three C's are paramount. If you're looking to get capital, you need that $5 million or whatever it is, work on your confidence. I'm not investing with somebody who doesn't feel confident in what they're saying, right? If you can't talk to me about a deal and what you love about the deal, what you love about a market, where the risk is, how you're mitigating the risk, why would I feel confident investing with you if you're not confident in your own abilities, right? So that confidence has to be there. Credibility, I want to make sure that you've got the team, the resources, the experience where I can feel that, you know, where my money's in good hands. And then there's connections, you know, if you don't know these people, how are you ever going to get to invest with them? So you kind of have to always be expanding your network.
So talking about these three C's on your website, Kasmon Capital, C-A-S-M-O-N, capital.com, you have a sample deck, right? It says review sample deck. You can click on that and kind of gives you like a, gives you type in your email and gives you, talk to us a little bit about that. What exactly is
yeah,
that?
Listen,
I just subscribed, so I'll be getting your newsletter.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, the sample deal package is great for anyone who wants to have a professional business. If you're an active investor, or if you're interested in investing in these deals, getting the benefits we talked about, right? Being an LP, which basically means you can invest in these large apartment deals without the headaches of being a landlord. And I think that's the key. If you've got some real estate experience, you understand real estate, you know real estate is the path to fortunes, but you don't have the time or the patience to be a landlord and deal with all the issues that keep popping up, this is a great path. And the way these deals are structured, the general partnership team is overseeing the day-to-day operations. The limited partners get all the benefits of owning property without the headaches of being a landlord. So in this deal package, we lay out some of the things you need to know and pay attention to. You know, information about the market, the deal structure. We talked about a 70-30 split, 8% pref. If those terms are unfamiliar to you, well, great. Look at this deal package, and then you can start to break them down so you understand what it is you're actually looking at. On top of that, what kind of information do you want to communicate about the deal, the business plan, all of these things, the team, right? Who's on the team? What do you need to know about the team? That's the kind of information. So whether you are active or passive, it's a great way to wrap your head around the kind of information you should be looking for. If you're an active investor and you've got a deal, but you're not putting it together in this kind of format where you're sharing this level of information, you're not doing a good job of getting that confidence for the other investor, because they may have questions, but they don't even know the questions. But a lot of it is this: if they don't know the city you're investing in, what do they need to know about that city to feel comfortable? When we started this show, you said you've never been to Cincinnati. You know, you've been to Columbus, which is about maybe 2 hours away. It is 2 hours away, by the way. Right. But you weren't familiar, right? So if I'm talking to you about a deal in Cincinnati, I know I have to give you some information about the market, right? I need to tell you that, you know, it has 7 or 8 Fortune 500 companies located here, from, you know, Fifth Third, Procter & Gamble, so many other Cincinnati Children's Hospital. I have to tell you some of these things. I have to let you know that Amazon just built a $1.5 billion airport hub, you know, right there. I have to tell you, you know, some of the key metrics so you understand why we like a market like Cincinnati, right? So you can feel comfortable about it. I've got to tell you about the submarket. You know, hey, here's what's going on in this submarket. Here's what's happening with rents. Here's what's happening as far as development is concerned, right? I got to tell you about me. I got to tell you about the team. I got to tell you about the deal. I got to tell you about our business plan. What are we going to do to this property to make money? You know, how are we adjusting for risk? What are we doing to protect your investment, right? So you need to know all these different things. And these are the questions that anyone needs to understand if you're going to invest in a deal. So that deal package gives you a chance to wrap your head around it. If you're interested in learning more, as you pointed out, you can go to kasmancapital.com/sample deal. It's free. And then we send a couple follow-up emails too, because the reality is it could be overwhelming. Lots of information to take in there. You may not know what to pay attention to. So in our follow-up email, we'll break out the top 7 things you really need to pay attention to whenever you're reviewing a deal. And that's whether it's my deal, anybody's deal, right? There's 7 things you really want to be able to answer these questions for. So, you know, it's just some free information I think can help a lot of people wrap their head around making the right decisions so that they position both themselves and their investors to be successful investors on any deals they're looking to do.
Awesome. So guys, go to kasmancapital.com and get that sample deck. I'm also on your Instagram account, Jay Kasman, and just became a follower as well. You got LinkedIn. Everything will be here on the show notes below. You got Twitter, LinkedIn, all that will be here for everybody to follow along. And there's also a link on your IG for your podcast. So it's there as well. John, I appreciate you being on the show. Another question here. So you're from Cleveland, but you live in Cincinnati. So when the Bengals play the Browns, that's my main question. Come on, man.
I'm from Cleveland, man. My wife is from Cincy, so she's a diehard Bengals fan. But, you know, I'm Cleveland, man. Browns all the way.
Browns all the way. Look, man, I'm a Bills fan, and I got one of my really good friends. He's in my mastermind. He lives in Cincinnati, and I was texting him by the playoffs. I said, man, I'm scared of the Bengals. I said, man, that's the only team I'm scared of. Forget Kansas City. Kansas City gets on fire, doesn't matter, but I'm scared of the Bengals. And man, they did well. So that's good. You stay true to your roots back in Cleveland. And, you know, but did you cheer at all for the Bengals? How about that?
I do, as long as they're not playing for the Browns. But here's the deal, man. The challenge is, you know, when you have two teams that are rivals, you can only cheer so much. And I've run into this a lot in my life. I used to live in Detroit, obviously working at General Motors. I'm an Ohio State Buckeye fan, but we sponsor the Michigan Wolverines. So I would be, you know, out there at the big house, you know, on behalf of, you know, my company should be supporting, you know, the blue and whatever they call themselves. Right. And no offense to all my Michigan fans. We cool. It's all good. But I was torn. I'm like, wow, I've got to be around this. I got to hear this hail to the victors. So it was always a little annoying for me being a true, you know, true Ohio State fan. But, you know, bottom line for me is, you know, I can always support the region. For me, I'm a Midwest kid first and foremost. So I like to see, you know, the region doing well. We get picked on enough from all my friends on the coast as it is. So I like to see the region doing well. But, you know, I'm always going to stay, you know, true to where I'm from. And, you know, Cleveland, Ohio is where it's at.
That's awesome, man. So two things. Talk football. We have one of your kids in the background. People got to understand we're still humans, right? We still have families. We still deal with everyday life, which brings me to the best part of the show. And I am going to share my screen and you'll see it here shortly. So what I'm bringing up here is called the Naked Truth Roulette. I'm going to ask you 3 random questions. It's got nothing to do with real estate, right? It's just 3 random questions. And that's pretty much it. Let me get our roulette here. Let me know when you see it.
I see it.
All right, cool. So I'm going to ask you 3 random questions. And let's see what we got. Ready? Let's go with the first question. Here we go. All right. So if you could take any celebrity on a date, it could be a bromance, doesn't matter, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, man. So if I can do the bromance, then it's going to be The Rock.
The Rock. Oh, man. I'm a huge fan of The Rock, man.
Yeah.
Man. Awesome. So The Rock. So you would pick The Rock as your bromance for a celebrity date. That's awesome.
I would.
Second question. Here we go. All right. Favorite quote.
Oh, easy. I'm a former wrestler. I guess that explains the Rock thing a little bit more, but amateur wrestling. But in the West gym of our high school, we had a quote on the wall and it said, tough times don't last. Tough people do.
That
first week of practice, coach made it very intense on purpose. We'd start with, you know, 40, 50 guys in a room. By the end of practice, half those guys didn't show back up. So it was always kind of a mental test to say, show up, and that's 50% of it. So just making sure you have that mental toughness is my key.
Awesome. That's a great quote. I love that quote. All right, here we go. Last question. Well, that's supposed to say pineapple, but how do you feel about pineapple on your pizza?
No pineapples. I love pineapples. I love a little sweet flavor on different stuff, but on the pizza, I'm a pass.
No pineapple on pizza kind of guy. John, thank you so much. You survived the Naked Truth Roulette.
I love it, man. Good stuff.
Super cool. Anything else you'd like to share with the audience before we let you go?
You know, I think just in general, get started, figure out how to scale your life, your portfolio. If you're in single family now, I'm not one of those guys who's going to make you do multifamily. You've got to do what makes sense for you, but don't play small and play scared. If you want to be in multifamily, but there's something holding you back, figure out what that is. And listening to shows like this are a great way to start, but you have to surround yourself with people who are taking that action. And sometimes the best next step is talking to someone in that space, figuring out how you can get started in a way that is acceptable for you. But take that chance, take that risk. Don't risk it all. But on the same note, play that roulette, figure out what you can do to get started and get some traction, and just continue to learn as you grow.
Awesome. Thank you, John, for being on the show. I am your host, Javier. Don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel, or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.